If Lands Could Kill, featuring Knife City, Equipness, Bright, and Hot Sauce.
All right, welcome to If Lands Could Kill. My name is Knife City.
I'm Equipness.
This is Reich.
And a little bit of Hot Sauce.
And welcome to episode 9. So, let's quickly talk about what has been going on lately with us and stuff and things.
In everyday life. Oh, man.
Have things been happening? I don't know of anything.
I just been kind of like cruising through life, you know, just staying under the radar. Actually, no, I've been playing, I'm actually got addicted to a game that I played back in like 2002. Or no, wasn't it 2012? That was a while ago.
Whoa.
But, 2012?
Which is it?
Yeah, no, that's
about
quite a big gap.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Wait, hold on. Carry the 6. That's a 10-year difference.
That's a big difference. No, it was 2012. It's Plant Side 2.
Oh, you played Plant Side.
I started playing Plant Side 2 again because I first played it when it came out. Like, I played it when it was in beta, and it was awful, awful game. And then I started playing it after it came out of beta. It was not as bad. And I put like a bunch of money into this game because it's a free to play game, right? But that's where they get you
microtransactions.
Yeah, microtransactions. You can like, oh, if you want to pay monthly, you can pay like $15 a month and get all these cool perks and like all this bonus experience or whatever. Or you can like microtransaction all your weapons and all the equipment and stuff. So I was like, and they did like these cool deals where they had like a sale where if you paid like $10, you get like $20 worth of like credit or whatever. So
that is total.
They got you, dude. Oh, they got God. Fish hook.
$100, drop it.
I'm like, if I can get twice as much.
Yeah. So I ended up dropping.
Got none.
I know. I should have never bought anything. And I dropped a lot of money in that game. But I recently started picking up this past week, and it's actually changed a lot. It's really fun now. Before it was just like really buggy, and now they fix it where it's like actually playable. Mm. And the only thing now, it's just like not a lot of people play it. I mean, there's still like a decent amount of good stuff because it's like an MMO first person shooter, right? And there's still a ton of people that play, so there's a lot of action. You just got to know where you got to like where to go because there's like three different continents and they're like fucking huge. But it's like really cool. It's like imagine like Battlefield 4 in the future, but with like fucking crazy tanks.
Sounds like Destiny, that new game that's coming out, where it's like kind of MMO-ish, and then it's first-person shooter, and it's in the fucking future, and there's different clans and whatever else, you know, I'm sure it's...
That's crazy, because, like, you have a huge, like, piece of land, and they're kind of, like, sectioned it off, and you're trying to, like, advance your position and gain that, like, spot, so you take it over, and then, like, people can see it, and they come try to attack it, so you kind of have to, like... manage attacking and defending what you have, because you don't want to, you know, take something and have them take something else of yours.
Well, that's good. That's, you play Magic for that reason. There you
go. Yeah.
So. Building up our fucking video game skills with cards.
Yeah, so I've been playing a lot of Plant Side 2, put more time into that. It's actually gotten a lot better. So if you've played it in the past and then you stop playing it, maybe check it out again, because it's come a long way.
I was sucked at that game.
But yeah, it's definitely, it's hard, dude. It's like, you gotta be good at like first-person shooters, because it's like, shit's so unconventional, because you're like, in first-person shooters, you're like, okay, I have this corridor, and I know I spawn on this side of the corridor, and my enemy's on that side of the corridor, and they gotta come this way to get to me, so I can just like, you know, hang out here, or like, play around that strategy, but in this game, it's like, 360, like, all directions, like, they can come from above you, or like, fuck it, well, not from below you, but...
By land, by sea!
By sea, and like, they'd be like, dropping off, like, tanks just fucking just run you over and shit, it's a lot of fun, though.
Nice, nice. But
check it out.
Alright, Hot Sauce, what you been up to, you kook?
You kooky bastard.
You kook with your gum.
You son of a bitch.
So...
What kind of gum are you chewing on right now, by the way?
I got a pack 72 pieces of Juicy Fruit.
That looks like it's halfway done already.
Wait, because it only lasts for fucking 7 seconds.
You just swallow your gum?
Actually, when you get past the candy shell, and it just turns into one soft piece of gum, then the flavor's gone.
Yeah.
You have to wait till all the little fucking sugar crystals on the outside dissolve, and then you have to spit that shit
out. Well, it is Juicy Fruit.
It is, yeah, just like fucking Zebra Stripe.
Oh, my, Zebra Stripe was the worst.
Yeah.
That was the worst.
Oh, really bad, really, but it tastes so good.
Yeah, though. You chew it for like 4 seconds, and you're like, fuck, all the flavor's gone. You start licking the paper, you're like, fuck.
Yep.
Exactly.
So anyways, I've been doing that. Juicy fruiting it up all day. Nice. The life.
JC-ing it up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, JC.
No! whatever, juicy fruit chewing gum. There you go.
Yeah.
Juicy. Okay. So I bought two games recently, but I haven't played either of them. I just downloaded them, installed them. Got the expansion for Diablo 3, Reaper of the Wilds. No, I'm just kidding. No, Reaper of Souls, right? Or something like that.
Reaper of the
Wilds. That might even be wrong. I don't know.
I think and, it's Reaper of Souls.
Reaper of Souls. And then I got the expansion for XCOM Enemy Unknown, which is Enemy Within. I don't really know much about it.
Sounds like a game about a rapist.
I don't like Enemies Unknown. No, no, now he's inside me.
Game and you have to get away. But you're blindfolded. And you have to figure out a way to get him off of you. Before you are pregnant with a rapist.
Anyways, thanks for everybody for listening. This will be our last podcast. We're getting shut down.
We might have to end that out. It's a little bit much.
Oh, man.
I think we're going to have sponsors, dude.
I know.
Oh, man.
I think that game's popular in India.
Oh, no, no. We're making fun of everyone. That's crazy. Anyways.
So,
it's big and simple. I think that Blizzard listened to all the fans about how shitty the auction house was and how unfair it was, and now they removed all the bad stuff and put in a lot of good stuff, and now we can play a game of modern, awesome Diablo 3. I don't even know how long it's going to take. I don't even know if the game's like a fucking 5-hour game or like a 20-hour game or...
I'm having difficulty, man. I'm playing like a monk, and I'm going through like the hard mode, and I'm getting owned.
Are you allowed to play hard mode from the get-go?
Yeah.
Okay, because the other one, remember, you couldn't or whatever. You had to like, start off.
Up.
Okay. Interesting. So that's all I'm doing. I don't know. Maybe the listeners, maybe they know. Is it good? Is it bad?
I liked it so far. I like that the legendary drops and stuff like that happen more often. But,
They do happen more often?
Yeah. So, you know, you don't get, like, shafted. And, like, a lot of the new legendaries provide stats based on the class you're playing, so you don't get, like, useless junk most of the time. You get stuff you can actually use. It's pretty nice.
Excellent.
Addicting.
Mm-hmm.
Addicting game.
So I bought Watch Dogs for my girlfriend, and she didn't have a chance to play it yet, so I was able to hop on there for about 20 minutes, and feels like there's going to be a pretty big learning curve for the game, just because... what they're doing in the game hasn't really been done before, or at least I haven't played a game where it's been done before, and so there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve. So I spent the first 20 minutes just, you know, trying to figure out the buttons and and what exactly to do.
So it is a pretty complicated game because, like, it's kind of like GTA. You can, like, steal people's cars and stuff like that. But you're allowed to hack stuff, so, like, the street lights and stuff like that. So I saw one guy streaming it, and, like, he was trying to, like, drive, like, he's getting chased by a cop. So he's trying to, like, run away, weave through traffic and stuff like that. And, like, he tried to disable a light because he had to, like, kind of look back to hit it. So everybody would stop and they'd jam up the cop cars. And he just, like, flew right off the edge and, like, like died because he couldn't do two things at once. So there's definitely a lot.
The driving seems pretty, like, legit on there. Like, the driving mechanics for it it wasn't, like, all janky, you know?
Like Grand Theft Auto kind of driving or whatever?
Well, Grand Theft Auto even wasn't
you just,
all
like,
that
hijack
bad.
Cars
it's not, yeah. Like, it's not, like, simulator style, but it's not, like, arcade-y necessarily. If you hit something, you're going to stop.
Yeah, for that type of game, you kind of figure, like, they wouldn't take too much time, like, on the driving mechanics, but it was actually pretty legit, so I was surprised by that. But I plan on getting down on that later today. And I also downloaded a game called Bastion, I think it is.
Oh, yeah. Bastion's really good.
Yeah, I just heard about it on some other podcast, and so I went to go check it out. And once again, in my quest for finding, like, arcade-y type of games on Steam, it was on sale for, like, $3 also, so I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And I played about 20 minutes of it, and it's, once again, exactly what I want in a kind of arcade 15-minute type of game.
It's fun. It's not game-changing in any way. There is not, I don't think there's many, like, moments in the game where you're like, wow, this is great, you know, whatever. You don't get, like, a feeling from it necessarily, but I feel like they tried to get you to feel like emotion for it, but I didn't really get that. But it still was really good. It was really exciting to
play. Like you said, it wasn't like groundbreaking or anything, but they just took kind of what was already existing for that genre and like built on it, took their own take on it, and it was pretty cool. Like, there's like this raspy voice guy doing the narration.
That's what I was going to say. Like, the narrator will actually narrate stuff you're kind of doing. It's not like...
And he's all smooth about it.
Yes. It's a narrator. The narrator's just such a... Yeah, that's what a narrator does. But
No. I was laughing about that. I was laughing because as soon as I, like, you know, he narrates, and he fell from the sky or whatever. I didn't know that you could just literally walk off the edge. Like, I thought there'd be, like, invisible boundaries or whatever. Yeah. And I just walked off the edge, and he's like, and then he fell, and then he walked off the edge and died. Yeah. And he's like, no, I'm just kidding. He's fine. Or, like, something like that. I was like, what?
His adventure is over.
That's really cool. I'm pretty sure a game might have done it before, but like that's one of those like distinct features that like you don't really get to see in a lot of games. You know, a lot of it's scripted and comes in at certain points. Just like reacts to what you're doing and narrates it.
I remember the music fondly too.
The music is the best.
A lot of games don't. I don't remember the music, even though I could say like, oh yeah, the music in that was good, wasn't it? You know, or whatever. But I can remember it just like I can remember fucking Halo, the intro to Halo or something, you know? I can sing it in my head, hum it in my head, which is cool. It's good for a little $3 game to do that.
Yeah, that was probably the highlight of the game for me was actually the music.
Yeah, they spent a decent amount of time instead of just doing like some 8-bit fucking MIDI file, you know, they took time to record some actual cool music, so that's all I've been doing.
Nice.
So, what you got, quick?
I've been doing jack shit. The best thing I've been doing... Other than obviously staying up with Magic, you know, reading all the articles coming out, the new archetypes that people are starting to play. And I started playing this one game called Typeracer, typeracer.com. So pretty much what happens is you get pitted against other people and it gives you a paragraph and you got to type in the paragraph and you race other people. So like it's really to help... your typing skills.
I'm still really hard good about this. I'm super...
Yeah, it's nice. You know, back in high school, I used to be at like 90 plus words a minute. You know, now I tried it out. I'm like 68 or something like that. So I'm trying to get that back up. But it's pretty fun. I like it. It's pretty addicting because it's like the whole armor thing. You know, you're always trying to achieve the higher numbers. Like, you're always chasing those higher numbers. So that's kind of what it's like for me. But it's really fun because, you know, I'm always typing and it's always good to be better at typing.
I can't tease you too much about it.
I'm sure you can if you really want it, but would I care? Not really.
Seems all right, though. It actually does seem... I probably would like it, you know, honestly.
Of those things, you know, it can fill up 10 minutes. You know, you don't really have anything to do. You don't want to start a game because, you know, getting into it, figuring out where
sounds
you're
like
at.
A mobile game, but you wouldn't want to do that on a mobile device.
Well, yeah.
For, like, typing.
Just feel like that style
of
game.
What do you type?
They like just type it's...
Is it random words, or is it like actual...
Well, it's an actual
sentences?
Paragraph. A lot of the times, like, it will try to give you words, but they'll, like, alternate. Like, so one will start with an A, the next one will start with B, then the next one will start with an A. So it kind of, like, trains you to not, I don't know, just to get in a rhythm of not, like, following stuff and actually, like, looking at what you're typing, I guess. And there's a lot of punctuation, like
Spanish
periods.
And French and
apostrophes,
German.
Apostrophes, colons, semicolons. Yeah.
Then you gotta go to fucking quotes. Binary.
Yeah. You know, alts, 0, 1, 2, 3.
Ladies. Don't tell me.
Yes.
You're a
yes.
Dick.
Oh!
I think you should divide it into four pieces. And we'll probably all be fine.
Be four.
What is it?
The red tie burrito. Red tie burrito.
Red tie burrito is a California burrito.
Okay, so California burrito, right? The burrito California.
El burrito California.
El burrito de California.
Yeah, California burrito is French fries, carne asada, which is beef, because people might not know what the fuck carne asada is. I have no idea what you're listening. What's that?
Different from carnitas.
Yeah, no, they're not idiots. They're just not from...
Different from carnitas.
Idiots. Yeah, different from carnitas. French fries, carne asada, cheese, guacamole, sour cream, pico de gallo wrapped in a tortilla. Burrito. But this one, instead of wrapped in one tortilla, it's wrapped in a quesadilla. It's two tortillas.
Big-ass quesadilla.
Big-ass quesadilla.
sounds delicious.
It's like cheese overload with everything else for like $7. It's fucking amazing.
About a month ago, I went and ordered two of them for the first time. And when the lady handed me like the bag it was in, like the plastic bag, like just the weight of the two burritos almost like broke the like handles of the plastic bag. Like that, there are huge fucking
burritos. Double bag burritos.
Came to like $17.
You grab it and you kind of like almost lose it at first because you're not expecting all the weight.
Yep. Exactly. The best burrito I've ever had. Well, probably the second best burrito.
What's the best?
Santee California burrito.
The Santee California burrito.
The extinct burrito.
It's extinct. Still it's the best burrito.
Some say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still the best
stories
burrito.
Say, or stories tell.
Yeah, historians have.
So that one was carne asada, french fries, nacho cheese sauce, and jalapenos.
Yeah.
Yes.
In a tortilla.
But it wasn't like the shitty, like, nacho cheese sauce. You know how, like, some nacho cheese is just like
that real fake American cheese.
Yeah, taste? Exactly.
Kind of tastes the aluminum in it.
Yeah, but this was, like, the good stuff.
Okay.
And I don't know why it was so good. I mean, probably because I was in an altered state of mind half the time I ate them, but those were fucking delicious. Chemical induced or not, my taste buds were always happy. So,
getting hard again.
Yeah, I'm fucking erect. Speaking of erect, we got together this morning at 8 o'clock for a draft. Figuring
that's a reference that like I had Morningwood on the way on the drive over here.
Yeah, Morningwood is always a good segue into magic. So we met up for a block draft today, which is Theros, Born of the Gods, and Journey into Nyx, and I don't know. Why don't you guys go over what you drafted? Hot sauce?
Simple as that, huh? I just drafted... Well, first of all, I went 2-1. Three of us went 2-1. And one of us went 0-3. I'm just going to say that right now.
Yeah, one of us went 0-3. I don't know who that was.
So, my pack one, pick one was Extinguish All Hope. And that's awesome because... It's kind of hard because there's a lot of enchantment stuff on either side of the board. But it's good, you know, it's removal. And limited's all about removal for me. So I drafted nothing but removal. I have Guild, Extinguish All Hope. What is this?
Excoriate.
Banishing Light. Spiteful Blow. Asphyxiate. And other, like, party tricks for combat. I just took every piece of removal I could for the first two packs. And then the third pack, I just drafted every creature. So the creatures are garbage, more or less. Mm-hmm. But whatever, my little 2/2 will get through if you have no creatures. So I did fine until I played quick and I drafted zero removal both games, and he just fucking sweeped me. I got a Banishing Light in one game, but I was frozen on mana, and I just fucking sat there. I had to use it on like some little dirtly piece of crap,
my like Oresco Sun Guide or something.
Yeah, like some that. Flyer. I'm like, whatever. I don't want to use it on this, but I had to. And so he just whooped me over like no problem. But otherwise, I was able to, they were able to bring out some shit, and then they would bestow it, or whatever, or pump it up with some spell, and then I would just kill it, and that's how I won my first two matches. So, what do you got, Reich?
Oh, man, I don't even want to talk about mine. So, like, my first pick...
You've been sad all day, I know.
Yeah, I know. This has been a sad day for me today. My first pick was, I had to go for the money card. It was Temple of Epiphany, which is the blue-red Skyland, and I pretty much regret picking this card as my first card now, because it kind of influenced the way I kind of went the draft. I'm like,
it was a trap.
Yeah, it was definitely a trap. So I picked this one, and then of course the second pick was the Sigil Starfish, the good old Scryfish. So I was like, oh man, like I guess I'm gonna have to just play. I'll play the Temple of Epiphany now. I can play blue and maybe pick up some red cards and just play blue red, which is a mistake.
The Scryfish did work though.
Yeah, the Scryfish was like the all star of my deck. I pretty much got all like the counter spells and everything like that. I probably got too many counter spells because I ended up really kind of creature short. The only other good card I had really had in my deck was a Cloak Siren, which is a 4-mana blue card, which has flash. It's a flying 3/2. That was the other all star card.
Which is a good card.
It's a really good card, but I pretty much didn't have anything else to back up all my dispel. I didn't get any bombs through any of the drafts, so I kind of dirtled around and just played, you know, counter spells, and I ended up just going 0-3. I didn't win a single game.
Counter them spells till you die.
Yeah, so it was kind of like a deck where it's like, friends don't let friends draft blue-red, so just don't do that.
It's supposed to be a thing. I've heard it's a thing.
Yeah.
But it can be if you have the right
right cards.
Not with what you had.
I was not rewarded in any
he
of got the
packs. Okay, you know what made him? He had also that red-blue flyer that it's a 2-3, but when you're able to pay for scry, yeah. And then whatever that converted mana cost is, you can like turn it into its power. You can pump it to its power. Mm-hmm. And that card is like deceiving. Because you think it's going to be like awesome. And then he already drew the red-blue scry land, so he's like, oh, I have to do it now. I have these three cards. That's foil. Three cards, you have to do it, right? Yeah, there's nothing else.
I just didn't have enough bombs to deal with everyone else's good stuff. So, but, I mean, it was fun. I just kind of just conceded most of the games because it just kind of ran out of gas after I got all my dispels out of hand. And that was it. I wouldn't do it again. I don't recommend it.
I don't recommend it.
So, I came in first.
If you want to just give yourself a title, first place. I guess. You went 2-1.
But it was first.
By points. Yeah. Like judges had to tally the points.
Let's just say at the end of the day, I walked home with my extra booster pack.
I'm going to be so
and I opened it and I got junk. But, you know, that's the way it goes. But I drafted a green-white heroic / big stuff deck. So, pack one, pick one. I saw a good card that I liked from doing the pre-release. I didn't actually get to play with it during the pre-release, but I saw a lot of people play with it, and I thought it was very powerful, which is Hero's Bane. So it's a 5-mana 0/0, but when it enters the battlefield, you get 4+1/+1 counters on it. And then you get to pay 2 and double green, and you put X 1/1 counters on it, where X is its power. So you effectively get to double the power for 4 mana every turn. Instant speed, which is nice. You leave up 4 mana for like maybe a trick to blow them out. If then it doesn't happen, then you just invest all your mana into your Hero's Bane and then swing it for 8 next turn.
Yep.
So which is really good. Then, you know, that's kind of like what I started out with. And I was like, okay, green, you know, I can go green-black, maybe Constellation, I can go green-white. Green red is a lot of stuff to branch out of green. I think green is a really powerful color in the block. And I paired it with white, which is another really powerful color.
Yeah, I think white and green are like they're both very flexible.
Exactly.
You know what I mean, they even have green like has like even like removal, even kind of. I mean, it's not like just destroy necessarily. Like
they're good base colors.
Yeah.
Where you can add in any other color and it will be all right.
Because green, you can go into the dread strategy with black. You know, you can go green white. You can go kind of like heroic. You can go green red. You can go really big. So getting into green and getting into white. Like, just those two colors early on really sets you up good for the draft because you can go in any which direction you want, pretty much.
I'm not trying to hate on Reich, but, like, I would say that blue and red are the two colors that, like, are the additional colors, not the ones that you start off with.
Yeah, they're definitely
This is different. You got lined up the cards that made you go that direction.
Yeah.
But, like, blue and red, I wouldn't see all the blue and be like, okay, blue is it. Now what am I going to add to it? I would be looking for something, the other three colors, and then adding red or blue, at least in this meta or whatever you want to call it, this block.
So, like, my second pick was, like, Nyx Fleece Ram, and then once I saw those two cards together, I was like, okay, well, I got, you know, early defender, gained some life, and then I got a huge bomb at the end. So, like, at that point, I was like, okay, we're going all in. And then, you know, I had the Laguna Bound Trailblazer, which just did a lot of work. You know, and one of my more expensive cards that didn't really fit in the deck, but it proved to be very beneficial was the Market Festival. Because it allowed me to play... It's a 4-drop enchant land. And whenever it's tapped, you get 2 mana on top of whatever it produces, any color combination.
Yeah, it's pretty badass.
So it was nice. You know, it's a 4-drop. So I tried to play it on 5 or 6. So that way I can play a 3 or 4-drop afterwards. So it's not like I'm taking one full turn just to play this and get nothing on the board right away. And then, you know, top end, I had some good stuff like the Golden Hind Ox, which was really nice because I didn't have a lot of removal. So it was kind of hard if the ground got kind of cluttered. So it's really nice. I have quite a few enchantments in here. So it was nice because I can just, you know, drop a Hero's Bane, make an 8/8, drop that. And it's like, okay, you have to block it now. Like something's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of like my version of removal. And then what was really nice is Hunter's Prowess. And I actually pulled this combo.
You definitely got forced into green.
Yeah, those.
I would. Green was definitely super open. Yeah. He was taking it.
Yep.
So like, pick. One of the combos I had was the Hunter's Prowess, which is a 5-drop. Until end of turn, creature get +3/+3 and trample. And then whenever it deals combat damage to a player, you draw that many cards. And then Savage Surge is a 2-drop. Target creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn, and then tap it. So what happened is Hot Sauce had a Thassa's Ire, or he had something to tap down my guy.
Before I had a heroic creature.
A heroic creature.
A 3-1 heroic creature that if I was to cast a spell to trigger the heroic, I could tap down target creature. So
he tapped it down, because since Hunter's Prowess is a sorcery, so I kind of like just threw it out there. And I was like, okay, if he really wants to go this far with it, if he really wants to protect himself, I have a backup just in case. So it just, like, as soon as I played the Savage Surge, it was like a total blowout, because I got through for 7 damage, I drew 7 cards, and, you know, this was on, like, turn 5 or 6. So, like, it really just propelled me into the late game, where he was trying to just play catch-up, so it allowed me just to have all the gas and all the options, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a bunch of just, like, random stuff, like, that are in green and white. You know, that you normally see that are good, like Supplying Cranes, Absurd Alciad, Sun Guy, Crone Sky Guard, stuff like that. So
yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. Oh, fucking White Heroic Flyers. How I love you and hate when my opponent has me.
So I ended up drafting a black-white enchantment constellation deck, pretty close to the deck that I was able to put together my pre-release. And I picked one, a foil Dictate of Heliod.
You imagine. What a
dictate. I know, right?
But I had to pass a Banishing Light, so it was kind of a hard choice. I figured...
One's going to win you the game, and one's going to keep you alive. I don't know. I think that this one is the one more that it's going to win.
Yeah.
It's going to make sure that you fucking seal the deal.
I think the Dictate was the right choice in that. Just because the Banishing Light deals with one problem thing. This allows you to attack in profitably if, you know, your board state was kind of a parody at that point.
Yeah.
And it helps you with defense as well, because now you pumped up all their power and toughness, so now you can effectively trade if you want to. You have more options, so...
Oh, but the irony. But when he flashes out his Dictate of Heliod, I was able to Banishing Light it.
Yes.
It's the same. Right when you brought it out, I was like... that seems like a problem. Yeah, the card that you passed up will own your
champion. I'm sorry, sir.
So, but that was literally my win condition was Dictate of Heliod. Not really my win condition, but it was like the bomb of my deck.
That's huge.
I drew it every game. Every single game I drew it, and I played it every game. It never like got stranded in my hand. But the real winners of my deck, I had one Underworld Coinsmith. It's a white-black, has constellation whenever enchantment enters the battlefield. I gain 1 life, and I can pay a white and a black and pay 1 each opponent, or pay 1 life. Each opponent loses 1 life. So that was nice.
He's a guild mage.
He's a guild mage. I also had a Grim Guardian, 1/4 for 3, and constellation, each opponent loses 1 life when it or enchantment enters the battlefield. But the real like workhorse of my deck was the Servant of Timuret. I had 3 of them, and they were just a pain in the dick for everybody to deal with.
Those are horrible. If the board's like kind of stalemating, and then you can just do one minus 1 life every turn, it sucks.
I mean, taking it's away every turn,
taking away really fucking.
Just the fact that they have like regenerate makes it so hard to play around, because like
they can just swing into anything and still get their heroic.
Yeah, well, you just leave it back on blocks and you just do regenerate, especially if like their board state is better than yours, and then it eventually just grinds you down so much to where you can just get to parity, and then you can turn the corner. And the only thing I don't like, it's 3 mana to regenerate, and if you have more than one, that's 6 mana if you want to keep both of them, so you can't really progress your board state at that point, but you're not going to really be falling behind, because you'll have like 2 blockers for forever that won't die.
I tried to, like, if I had one on the board, I tried to hold the other one in my hand, because, you know, it would, like I said, it create a problem for whoever I was playing, so they'd want to get it off the board. As soon as they get off the board, I was like, oh yeah, I'll play my other one. I'm like, motherfucker!
Yeah.
and I also had just some dirtly fucking guys, Great Heart, Rotted Hulk, Stonewise Fortifier. Who the fuck plays those cards?
I was thinking about that.
And then I had a Hopeful Eidolon, which was nice to bestow and accounted for enchantment. And I also had 6 other enchantments. I picked Afara's Radiance, and I was able to do it one game where I enchanted my servant, And then I'd have him block, and I'd tap to gain 3 life. And then I'd have regenerate mana also. So I'd tap to gain 3 life, block with it, regenerate it, and then untap. So I was gaining essentially 4 life, and they were losing 1 life. So it was just hard to race. I had an oppressive raise for like trying to stave off early attackers. Then I had some cantrips, Chosen by Heliod, Scourge Mark. I had a Grizzly Transformation to be able to get through damage. And Nyx Infusion?
Mm-hmm.
+2/+2 or -2/-2. And then I also had 2 heroic guys, Wingseed Rider and Phalanx Leader. And then my suite of removal, Asphyxiate, Feast of Dreams, Last Breath, and Necrobite. So I was able to kind of grind out the game pretty nicely.
Yeah, it was all around. I think you had a pretty good build.
Yeah, definitely tough to play against. I like the deck, and also I was kind of familiar with it through playing it at the pre-release, so I kind of knew what I needed to make the deck work. So I went 2-1, and it was fun.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that, I don't think I said it, that I went blue, black, and white. Because we talked about what my removal was and stuff, but I didn't mention that I had to go 3 colors because I had, like, black removal, white, like, tricks and pump spells and indestructible stuff, and then I had blue creatures. So I just had to play all 3 or else I would have never had a nice curve and even split of, like, spells and creatures and stuff. Mm-hmm. So just let them know. 3 colors, I never done 3 colors in a draft, so this is a learning experience. But it was still good, though. I felt like I didn't get screwed on mana except for maybe 1 game.
Yeah, if you can, lock down the mana base for a 3-color deck, I think it's way more powerful than a 2-color deck.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, like, again, it's all about your mana base at that point. If your mana base will not work with you, then you pretty much don't have a functioning deck.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that was the first time we all drafted the whole block together, so.
Yeah, it was almost, we almost didn't make it.
We had to go on a journey for 1 Theros pack that we couldn't find.
Oh, yeah, we didn't mention that, huh? Journey to Walmart.
Yeah, yeah, journey into Walmart. We had to buy an intro deck just to get the fucking Theros pack out of there. So.
Yeah, because nobody had a single pack of Theros.
And we couldn't wait till 10 or 11 a.m. for another place to open up, so we fucking bit the bullet.
Yeah, I know.
It's funny.
So, yeah, let's jump into, speaking of Journey... Which I don't think we were talking about, but let's talk about it now.
Create segue.
Yeah. What do you guys think about the meta? Like, what do you guys think about, like, what it did to the draft? Like drafting.
Journey to the Nyx?
Yeah.
I mean, it has some good cards in Journey to the Nyx. I don't think it was, like, really game-changing. I think it put white more into the spotlight, I feel like, in a draft now. Like, white is a really strong pick with even just like the Fleeceborn Nyx or the sheep or whatever that is, the goat.
Yeah.
Sheep
will fuck your world.
That thing is an amazing card. And like having a Banishing Light in the format now, which is a really nice removal for, or like, you know, enchantment for white. I think it propelled white into more of a kind of a good spotlight. They were already good with like a Crone Sky Guards and like Phalanx Leader.
Well, you can like go a lot of different directions with white now. You can go white heroic, white enchantments.
Yeah. Not white, so much like deicide. But yeah, I mean, I liked it. I mean, there's some good black cards like that heroic or the inspired card.
Yeah.
Really nice. I mean, I think it brought. But I think the.
Well, that was in.
What was that in Born?
Oh, but okay. The Constellation guy.
Yeah, Constellation guy with the pinging
That's
away.
That's the biggest thing, I think, is that when I came here today, I was hoping to draft like a black white Constellation deck. Like a lot of removal, and then the rest of it would be Constellation. Just enchantments, Constellation. When I picked up that Extinguish All Hope, which is destroy all non-enchantment creatures, I was, from that point, I was like, I am only getting enchantment creatures as long as it's, you know, as long as they're worthy.
Yeah.
As long as possible. And I ended up getting... The thing is, Knife was to my right, which he was passing to the left. He was going for the same strategy, so he took every enchantment creature that was in black and white before I could get to it. I didn't know that until once I saw his deck. I'm like, well, you took everything I wanted.
Yeah.
So I had to drop
a bunch of nonsense. And you took all my removal.
I took all the removal, and you took all the enchantment creatures, and that's just how that fucking that went, you know? So, but I think Constellation is the shit.
Yeah, Constellation is really cool. Just Eidolon of Blossoms alone, just a house card.
I think only really, like... Green and black really benefited from Constellation, because what other color really has like a lot of good shit?
White has garbage Constellation stuff.
Yeah, well, I'm just talking about like draft specifically. Yeah. Like Because the Eidolon, that's fucking card draw like a motherfucker. And black, it just enables that black-white enchantments deck. Because it was kind of starting to peak up during when Born of the Gods came out. But especially with all the rest of this stuff, the constellation cards in the black constellation cards in Journey, like it just gave that deck everything it needed.
Like I like the Oak Heart Dryads. It's the constellation card in green. It two and a green for a 2/3, which is already Vanilla's Husk, really good.
Yeah.
Enchantment creature constellation. Whenever it or another enchantment enters the battlefield you control, target creature gets +1/+1 till end of turn. I really like it because it helps push through damage. The board's clogged up where you can't profitably attack or block. This helps you get there. This helps you push it over the top just by a little bit to where now you can start attacking and start taking down your opponent's creatures just to get through damage. And it helps you. It helps progress you through. It's early enough to where you can play it. Your one and two drops can get through for some little extra damage, or they can profitably trade at that point if it's something better. And then, you know, you drop a big fatty and give it, you know, +1/+1 on top of that. So now you have like a 6/7, and you just trample on through or something like
big
that.
Big fatties.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, so baby.
I think that that card's really good. You know, we'll have to see how it goes through. But one thing I was very unhappy about with Journey coming in to, when I guess kind of Born kind of crippled it, and then Journey kind of just put the nail in the coffin. But blue-black control, or just kind of control-y type decks aren't very functional, and they kind of moved over to the black-white attrition. A lot of gain life, a lot of opponent loses life. That's kind of, you know, with a lot of removal, just chip you away here and there. That's kind of the control strategy now, instead of you having the return phalanxes and voyages and a bunch of that, and just bouncing stuff and attacking for three every turn or something like that.
I think blue-black was definitely strongest in just Theros.
Triple Theros, yes.
Triple Theros. I won the first draft I did on Moto. I won with blue-black control and just grinding people out. And then I feel like Born came in and you just lost a pack of Theros.
Then and it went
just,
to like white-red.
You lost a pack of Theros, and then the heroic strategies gained a pack of really good stuff. And, you know,
The format got so much faster with just that one pack of Born. But I feel like Journey kind of gave blue-black a little bit, but just it's not where it was in Theros. I mean, I'd still like to force it.
It gave the deck some good stuff, but not enough to compete with what all the other archetypes got.
Right, right.
So it's just like you got some tools to work with, but it was never going to be on par with anything else.
Yeah.
So that was a disappointment for me because, you know, I like control, I like the grindy type stuff. But, you know, obviously, most of the times when I draft, I draft these quick heroic decks, so, and they've been paying off. So I guess that's a testament to what the format's pretty much about right now. It's just, you know, fast heroic stuff, and then the quicker you can kill them, the more games you win.
So what mechanics do you guys think are going to be, like, really relevant? Revelation?
Are you reveling?
Sphinx's Revelation? I can talk about that for days.
I'm going to say Ford or Toyota mechanics.
So which mechanics are going to be really dominant post-rotation, like Monstrosity, Inspired? Like, Inspired sucks all the ass right now, you know?
Well, with only people want to make it work.
People want to make it work. There's not a whole bunch of them, and even the ones that are there, there's not all that many good ones. So post-rotation, do you think Inspired's going to get better? Do you think Constellation is going to be good, or is it just going to be most of the Theros stuff? Like, what do you think is going to...
I think it's Heroic is the only thing that's really going to be the best, because Heroic doesn't require anything besides targeting, which every thing that will ever be magic will always target.
Well, do you think... So, like, Monstrosity
will never go away. It's there to stay as long as these... You know, as long as Pelucanos is around and Stormbreath Dragon, then Monstrosity will be a
true.
Thing.
That's true.
But I think...
But is it going to be... You think
more widespread, happen? Like Heroic. Yeah.
Yeah.
I say Heroic for sure.
I actually disagree in the fact that I think Strive is going to be the best one.
Oh, Strive's good. Dude.
Strive is going to be really good.
And everything, too.
It plays well into the Heroic strategy, but I just think the card quality and the fact that you need multiple cards strung together to make the Heroic strategy function, it's not going to get there. whereas your card quality and all these other things are going to be a lot better, and then you just play Shrive cards to, like, kind of win you more. You know, you have, what was the black one? It was the Silence the Believers.
Oh, that card is so good!
It's going to be really 7 mana, exile, 2 creatures, pretty much.
And all auras
attached to it. So it's really good. It's going to be like the premier removal outside of Hero's Downfall, because you can't really beat that.
Yeah, but you could do like 2 of each, you know what I mean, if you really wanted to, like,
yeah,
you know.
If I was running a black deck, which I'm going to run a black deck,
yeah,
I'd put like 4 of each, like, yeah, a black Black X control.
Fair enough.
Like, 4 of each and just fuck everything up.
Yeah.
Because even if it is in, like, it's a god or whatever and it comes online, boom, you could silence the believers.
Instant speed, so, you know, you can get them, which is really good.
Strive is sweet.
Yeah.
Strive is sweet.
You know, Johnny's Presence, really good. You know, it's going to be a lot of white weenie strategies and stuff like that.
It takes, it's that,
And launch the fleet.
I was thinking of the older card, the one that's the 2 colorless and a white, where populate, creature, prevent all...
Oh, Rootborn Defenses.
Rootborn Defenses, everything's indestructible and you populate. I think that sorcery speed, and then this the Johnny's Presence is instant speed, and you don't want to protect all your creatures anyways. You don't have to. You just want to protect 1 or 2.
Yeah.
And it's a Strive card, so like you don't need to pay 3 at sorcery speed. And I don't know. Oh, it's instant speed. Maybe
it's instant speed. But it's nice that it gives you the flexibility.
Yeah.
Like,
leave 1 open.
Yeah, that's cool. You can have a couple copies of the card in your deck. You play 1 early game just to, you know, help remove a blocker, get some damage through, help stabilize, and then... Or, you know, it can be late game and you top deck it and you're just like, yes, now I just won the game because I can remove 2 of your blockers and push in for a leaf.
Right.
So,
Rootborn Defenses, that's an instant. I know, I think about it. That's an instant.
I was saying
the sorcery is not. It's an instant.
Yeah.
But still,
this is a replacement. 1,000
times better.
This is 1,000 times better.
Yeah.
And now the Rootborn Defenses was getting sideboard play in, like, a lot of white decks.
Plus, Johnny gives that +1/+1.
Yeah.
So that's awesome as well. I'd much rather have it than populate. Even though I think populate would be good going forward, because we have a lot of ways to create tokens and generate tokens. So
populate, that was like the last block, you know, that's going to be gone.
It's not going to be
gone. Rotation,
back,
so, that shit's gone.
Yeah.
It'll have to come back some other time, you know.
It would be nice if they brought it back, and just a couple cards would be okay. But yeah, I don't think it's going to come up in M15 or current.
They went heavy to that green, the Selesnya stuff. That was heavy.
The
more I look at it, I'm like, man, there was like 30 fucking cards that were
Mara, where token populate nonsense. To token creatures.
Yeah.
It's a creature, you know, it's a
bring out twice as many, you know, whatever.
I'm so glad that's gone.
Ugh. So,
it's quite crazy.
Nobody plays it anymore.
I don't play
Strive, Scry, and Monstrous are the ones going forward.
I feel like Strive is the bestow of the instant and sorcery, because it's like good early game, but it's also good late game, you know?
Yeah,
just like bestow.
You're right.
It's always mana efficient.
Yeah,
always,
so it's not a bad draw beginning or late game.
Mm-hmm.
So
is powerful to do, man. To be flexible, that's really, really powerful.
So, like, Silence the Believers, Johnny's Presence, Launch the Fleet, like, buy them up now. Because they're at least going to get a couple of dollars more as soon as Ravnica rotates out and stuff like
that. No doubt that there's going to be, like, more black removal. There's always at least 1 or 2 good black removals in
we'll
the
see.
Set.
We'll that's its thing. So it has to have it.
Yeah.
It won't be black
it's
anymore.
Such heavy removal. But Silence the Believer, because it says exile.
Mm-hmm.
It says fucking exile. Like, I don't know, at least since we've been playing, other than Guild, there hasn't
which
been an exile. Which is sorcery.
Seed.
So
Last Breath.
It's only 2.
Well, but I mean, in black.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
black,
it's such
exile.
A big deal for black to be able to exile something. Because generally.
Black usually is kill.
Yeah, destroy
killing
or sacrifice or something.
It.
So I think that's huge.
You know, about the Inspired, I kind of like King Makar.
Dude,
I want to
make him work.
I want to make him work, dude.
I want to make him work. I shoved him in my human deck, and I haven't been able to, like, really use him to efficiency yet.
Yeah. From my point standpoint of view is that if you're going to do Inspired, you have to have Springleaf Drum or other ways to reliably tap them outside of combat, just because a lot of the Inspired creatures are so weak on
but
their
then they
own.
Got, he's, they also got, like, the Regenerate stuff.
Yeah.
You know, +2/+0 Regenerate. Like, they have all these ways to, like, these little party tricks you can do during combat that you're like, why is he, this thing, this 2-3 can't attack you, and it'll never fucking untap. But there's so much shit in black to make it. And then you get to Party Trick, which will probably kill one of your opponent's creatures, and then at the fucking beginning of your turn, then you get to exile another one.
Yeah.
Like, I think that card is sick.
Yeah, like I have Boon of Erebos in my human deck. Yeah,
exactly.
So it's like, oh, I'll just block King Makar. Oh, and he has +2/+0. So he dies, and he regenerates, and I exile something on the up.
And then you get mana. You get the number, it gets the...
Oh, yeah, I get the mana.
The gold. Yeah. Gold, I love gold.
Gold. So I'm excited for him, but... I mean, what other cards that are out right now are going to really, like, see their time in the sun once rotation hits? Or more specifically, what cards that are out right now that are going to be rotated out... Like, they're going to leave such big holes in the current decks. You know what I mean?
Big holes.
Sphinx's
Revelation is gone.
Why? Supreme Verdict? Why?
I mean, granted, I think
just Tension Sphere the biggest.
The Tension Sphere, yeah, it's pretty...
Well, I mean, that is huge, but...
It's really Sphinx's Rev which makes the control decks. You can't have... The way it's built now, you can't... reliably win with a control deck without Sphinx's Rev.
Yeah, you need to have that card draw.
And gain life. You just need to gain the life. Like, the card draw is like icing on a cake, but just being able to pad your life total and to stabilize is really what the card does. And then just drawing in the extra gas is, you know...
Well, it's like, when I play a quickness, like, I just try and cast everything as soon as I get it, just to get the counters out of his fucking hand, because they're just gonna sit there the whole fucking game. And then once he Sphinxes, you know, he has, like, two cards in hand, and he fucking Sphinxes, and it's like, fuck, he just has all those more counter spells that he's gonna draw into, so what the fuck am I gonna do? So, I think Sphinx's Rev is huge. You know, it's draw cards and game life, where it's X, like, so it can be anything, it's not like two, you know?
Should have been printed.
So
never should have been printed.
I think that's going to be like the biggest one out of all these decks.
Well, control is going to be non-existent. I think after rotation, like
it's going to be existent, like that
prevalent of control. Control still be around. It's always around, but I don't think it'll be that major of a hitter once they lose those main cards out of their deck. Because unless they reprint something in M15, I mean, for at least a little while, we probably won't see control that
much. We won't see, like, the blue-white or the Esper versions. I don't think that...
We'll see black control.
I think it's going to go over to, Bant or American. So Bant being blue-white. Green.
They have Anger of the Gods, right?
Yeah, that's still a good sweeper right now. Yeah, it's really good. You know, of course, I'm going to say I'm 99% positive there's going to be another 4-mana sweeper in the set, and there's a couple of cards that I saw that got spoiled for M15. They say destroy whatever, it cannot be regenerated. So
they have one where it's sorcery speed, destroy. Wait, is this for conspiracy or not? Let me correct myself after I say it. Is that it's a 4-mana or a 5-mana. Destroy all creatures that cannot be regenerated. Pay 2 more, and this can be cast at instant speed.
Okay.
That might be a conspiracy card, but I just
didn't
see it.
That might be. I'm not positive, but, you know, just the fact that they brought that clause back lends me to believe that Damnation might be coming back.
It might be conspiracy.
So Damnation is a 2BB. Destroy all creatures. They cannot be regenerated.
What? So, there's 2BB? Really?
Yeah. It's a 4-mana sweeper, so.
I thought it was like 6 or something.
No.
Dude, that would be so sweet. You stay out of my black.
What are you talking about?
Stay out of my black.
Yeah, I mean, all the other decks kind of have a segue into the next kind of format.
They kind of have, like, things
like
that you can,
like, Red Green Monsters, like, big thing you're losing is Domri, of course, and, like, Gore Clan Rampager, but there's other things that can fill that hole. Like, you know, you can play another white to kind of get Elspeth or something. Like, you know, there's another way you can kind of build up your deck and not make it as competitive. I mean, make it more competitive than it is now. But, I mean, I think just from the rotation of RTR, or Return to Ravnica, it's just definitely control, like the... Like, losing Jace, Architect Thought,
it
like
loses
all of
all, like, literally, like, when you look at the deck, it's like Elspeth, Deicide, Faded Retribution, Banishing Light. Like, those are all the new Theros block cards. everything else is a Return to Ravnica block card. So, like, you're losing 75 to 99% of the deck. So,
like,
so control's going to get hit pretty hard.
Yeah, they're going to hit the hardest.
I think. What about mono black? I think mono black
will still be around.
Like, no, it's going to be around, but it's going to go a completely different direction, I think.
They'll have to go more control. Like, you know, like mono black aggro.
The card advantage goes away.
Yeah, you'll lose
a little bit of it.
Underworld connections, you lose Pack Rat, you lose Desecration Demon. But there's other cards that can fill those roles. Like Desecration Demon can be, you know, you can play Master of Feast and have somewhat of a big flying body.
Or what's the one that bestows?
Herald of Torment.
Herald of Torment.
Still a good flying evasion, but
it's like fucking yourself up though. A lot of the black. I don't think does the black stuff, the mono black right now, fuck up himself to
Erebos.
Oh yeah.
Erebos, you pay 2 life, and 2 mana, you draw a card.
Underworld connections,
Thoughtseize.
Okay, I guess it does.
The bones.
When you talk about like mono black, it's like
I know black does.
You're killing your opponent quicker than you kill yourself.
Yeah,
that's the whole thing.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean? So like, you're gonna do a lot of damage yourself. There's a card, and I think it was Journey, where you draw X cards and lose X life devotion to black. So that could be like
a new
Underworld connections replacement right there.
Yeah.
You don't really care about your life total because your cards are so much better, and you gain life through Grey Merchant.
It's like you're stabbing yourself while you're shooting your opponent.
I know that's like
they're gonna die first.
Black strategy has always been like that. I was just curious. I was just thinking about mono black specifically. And no, you're right. Yeah. There is. I mean, with Thoughtseize in it and all that shit, then yeah, it's definitely still
my... I think mono black's going to take a hit, but it's still going to be better off post-rotation than control.
Yeah.
Blue, yeah, it's going to take a hit control. Where it's not so much devotion-y, where you go in and, like, you know, like you're going to think, like, the discard.
Yeah.
So you disrupt their hand, you don't allow them to play anything relevant, and then you just kill them.
Yeah.
I think Painseer might see his day in the light coming up soon once RTR rotates out.
Still got to be aggro, though.
I already jumped off that bandwagon a long time ago.
I think he might. Well, I mean, he might have some kind of way to enable his Inspired, but I think he might have a little bit of a spot. Maybe like a two of.
I think Brain Maggot's going to be good.
But Brain Maggot's definitely there.
I was just, when it first came out, I was like, that card's all right. And then I was thinking about it the other day. It's like they have to waste a removal spell just to get one of their cards back.
Which means you got advantage of that card, not them.
Well, it's still like card for card.
But it's not because it gave you the turns. It gave you the advantage. I feel like
you gain tempo, but it's still card for card. You gained
tempo and they didn't. I feel like.
But it's like you could take a card out, but they can't just like give any card to get their card back. They have to do removal just to get their card back. So I think that's definitely going to be a big player, at least in my discard deck and probably in other mono black strategies.
Constellation.
Constellation. It's just really, it's black.
Yeah, I would side it out against like a red deck, you know, with a bunch of burn stuff.
Yeah.
But if they have to like waste a destroy creature card, that'd be awesome.
Or even a burn spell on it, like, fuck it, it's not going to my face. Yeah. That's fine.
Well, it's nice to go like turn one Thoughtseize, turn two Brain Maggot.
Yeah,
I mean that because
you already know what's in their hand.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, you can kind of play around it, and then like they're automatically down two cards, and you know they could have mulliganed and they could have kept a slow hand. So it's,
I think you can take their tempo away. You can take away their Sylvan Caryatid and their Courser, and make them go to turn five or six, and they'll be like, oh no,
so I don't have Thoughtseize the Courser, you Brain Maggot the Sylvan Caryatid or something like that if they can't cast it or whatever, because you know you don't want to give them a Courser back. You'd much rather have a Sylvan Caryatid, but you know there's a bunch of lines of play you can make like that.
Right, it's really gotta mess someone up. And Courser and Caryatid, those are good things that we can bring up now because those are not going away either.
No,
that perfect ramp that. The Mystic, well, the Mystic's going to go away, but they're probably going to get reprinted or something just like.
Well, we have Golden Hind right now, which is a 2-drop instead of a 1-drop.
But still, it's not the perfect 1-2-3.
Yeah.
You need the 1-2-3, whatever, which they'll probably have something.
I'm sure Elvis Mystic will come back.
Yeah, I'm sure everything's going to have something. And so then, boom.
Land of War Elves.
And that too.
It's just funny. It's just 12 cards. If you're playing green, you play these 12 cards, and then you move on to whatever strategy you want to do.
Yeah. I don't think red-green monsters is going to take a big hit at all.
Nope.
Like, sure, it's Domri's going to leave.
That's it.
Whatever, Domri.
They're just going to pick up another color. That's it. It's going to be tricolor instead of two-color.
Yeah, I mean, it could move to Jund, or Jund, it could get white. But I think just red-green by itself isn't going to lose too much.
Oh, yeah. It's
going to lose the Domri trick. But I mean, what else is it really going to lose? Gore Clan, Blood Rush, whatever.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's, I mean, it's still strong on its feet.
It'll lose its the Elvish Mystics, which is kind of a big blow, but I mean, there might be some other way to ramp around there.
Yeah, maybe, there's always
move away from mid-range and more go for an aggro. You never know.
So I don't think that's going to be hit at all.
No.
But Mono Blue, I think Mono Blue is going to go.
Yeah, there's nothing really to support it with the aside out. It's kind of hard to...
Even right now, like Mono Blue is kind of...
Once it loses Night Vale Spectre and the freaking Cloudfin Raptor. And
Night Vale Spectre may be the biggest hit because blue to activate fucking Thassa is like huge.
Tidebinder Mage going on.
Tidebinder. Yeah. What's the other blue, blue, red, red? Hybrid?
Oh, Frostburn. Yeah.
Frostburn, we're going to lose that. So it's like all the devotion is going.
All the devotion.
So.
I haven't seen anything that's really good.
No, there's a couple double blue, like double blue cards that have come out, like the two mana ones. But they've been like one of them was something where you can counter, you like name a card or something like that, and you can counter the spell of that card or some weird fucking thing like that. Like who cares?
A lot of other cards that require who cares? A lot of setup and other cards to make it good. Like the whole thing is you don't want to put two bad mediocre cards in your deck to make one good effect.
No,
you want to have solid cards that stand on their own and that can synergize with the other good cards as well.
So. And I really think that, I mean, white green wasn't, you know, in the top tier, but I think with all the stuff it's getting in the whole Theros block, I think it's going to be one of the dominating forces in post rotation.
We'll have to see how Ajani plays out.
I think Ajani's going to be. It's going to be good.
He's the biggest.
Ajani is the biggest thing. From when I played him, he is pretty good. I got to ult him once, which is nice. But just being able to put counters on something or go in the dig for a planeswalker creature or aura spell is really nice.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, it's just because you know they're both plus ones, so you know you're never having to minus it, and then you know you got the one turn of the planeswalker, and then it's gone. Pretty much, it's useless. You know, this one's always building up, so even if they can attack in and bring it down, you know, you're always working towards that ultimate.
I saw, like, I think maybe it's like a Bant planeswalker deck or something like that. On
like a Bant Grow, I think this is the one you're talking about.
I don't know what it is, but I remember he played like two Elspeth, two Kiora, two Ajani,
yeah,
and having them all do their part. Like, if you can get them out of the table, one is stopping the attack, you know what I mean? And then I think he had,
Johnny's pumping up the tokens. So,
yeah,
Kiora all kinds of shit. Something. Yeah, more
tokens that, you know, can if they have there. A lot of stuff,
yeah. Kiora can block. Protect yourself, and then you have something else to
that sounds horrible.
It was seeing it happen. Like, if you play like an aggro deck, like, good fucking luck, basically. Yeah. Like, he can still happen, because the Caryatid and stuff like that can get there, but regardless, though, if you can get two planeswalkers out there and they can like help each other, it's a fucking disaster for that person.
And like a Johnny can dig for Elspeth or fucking something.
And Kiora can draw you an extra card. Plus, you could play an extra land.
That sounds like an expensive deck.
It's like, you know, think about it, like there's white and then green white and then green blue. Like, it's just that they're all meant to work with each other. You know what I mean? It's not like it's not fucking Ral Zeric when it's red blue trying to mesh up with the other guys. No, they're all meant to work with each other. They all do their part. You know, everyone already just said it, but I've seen that, it really excited me.
Having those, like, three planeswalkers, I think, just having a deck revolved around planeswalkers is going to be really strong.
Mm-hmm.
I think those three are the best ones we've seen so far out of Theros block, with Xenagos, you know, coming in a close fourth. He's really good. I think he's going to actually rise in an unexpected way, just because he can produce mana and tokens as well, which is really nice. And, you know, it's one thing I really want to see is a Xenagos ultimate. I've never seen one.
I've never Nobody seen a really... plus one.
No, you've done it. Haven't you? Reich's done it, Xenagos, I think, in casual ultimate play.
Yeah.
Haven't you done it?
No, I have never ultimate Xenagos. Probably the whole time I've had him, I've probably only plus one of them maybe like a handful of times. Like, I counted on one hand.
The only decks that really revolve around the plus one on Xenagos is like the red devotion decks.
Yeah.
Anything that plays off devotion and just building up a ton of mana, because this allows you to play creatures, tokens for free, and then you plus it, and then you get all the mana, you know, equal to how many creatures you have. So
I think here's the deck for the week, right? We should get like two copies of all the planeswalkers. No, like five color. So we're gonna do all the planeswalkers we can, right? Two of,
mm-hmm.
And then we're gonna play
two of, or maybe one of every god. Probably one of every god. Okay. And then we're going to play four Sylvan Caryatids and four
Coursers,
Coursers and four Elfish Mystics. And just try it out.
All right.
And then four, like four Thought Seize and four Banishing Light. And call it down. Get all the powerful stuff that's already been proven and just fucking see if you can get there. And then play any, and then no basic lands. And then play
Chromanticore.
No, basically.
And Chromanticore. Two copies of Chromanticore.
Yeah.
And maybe, like, maybe you're going to, no basic lands. Maybe one or two. But otherwise, it's going to be all Skylands. No Shocklands. No Shocklands, all Skylands. Skylands will just, every single time you're going to play a land, it's going to get you there. It's going to get you one health from Courser. We're going to see if we can get there. If you can get to turn 6 to 7, I don't see how this shit's not going to work. So
I agree.
That's the deck of the week right there.
That'd be pretty
sweet. It's going to cost you $600 in standard.
I actually brewed a deck that doesn't have any basic lands, but we'll have to go over that next week. It's a Jund deck. I actually played it on one of our Versus videos, so go check it out on YouTube. But right now, how about we hop into some noobs knowledge? No! So, what the fuck are we going to talk about this week? You know what?
Tell me what.
Well, what is it, Knife City?
So, I have a question.
Yeah.
It's perfect for you.
Okay.
So, I wanted to build this aggro deck.
Oh, aggro, okay.
But I have a problem. For some reason, my deck can never produce a drop below 3.
Hmm.
What's my problem?
Well, you should probably see a doctor. But... So I think your problem is we should talk about how to build a good aggro deck.
And then his problem will be solved.
And then your problem will be solved.
Yeah, let's go over
the basics. I'm really glad you asked that question out of the blue. So to build a good aggro deck, aggro meaning...
First, what does aggro want to achieve?
What does aggro do? Aggro, what?
Well, Night City, what does that mean?
Oh, there, little Johnny, let me tussle your hair and tell you how it's done. So aggro is short for aggressive.
Is it? Are you sure?
Hold on.
Let's research this.
Wikipedia that.
What was it?
Wasn't it aggravation?
Aggravation?
It's aggravation.
Like the game?
Yeah, like the game. It is the game. That's it. Look up the rules for that game and you win.
And that's it for Rift Blends.
Figure it out for yourself.
No, no, anyways. No. So let's go through it. Yep.
So aggro meaning it wants to be fast. So meaning low converted mana cost creatures and drops. It's a lot of creatures. Generally speaking, it's a lot of creatures. And it usually doesn't care about its own life total. It's just trying to kill you as fast as it can by any means necessary.
So for an aggro deck, you're looking for a turn 4 or turn 5 kill. That's what the goal of the deck should be. Because once you go further than that, your card quality diminishes by
pretty much drops face.
Yeah.
So usually by turn 5, the other deck starts to catch up. You know, if you're facing a mid-range deck where they don't really start getting their good stuff on until the 4-5 drop.
They have to ramp into their good cards rather than playing really awesome 1-2-3 drops that beat the shit out of their opponent.
Yeah.
Right.
They're support cards for the late game.
Or even if it's not rampy, even if it's just they need to get to turn 4 before they can start kicking ass, you want to do as much damage. You want them at, like, 3 life by, like, turn 5, so where they're like, fuck, even though I play these creatures, like, even if I block 2 of your guys, like, I'm still dead.
Mm-hmm.
So generally, you want low casting cost. Like, for instance, Red Deck Wins. That's in standard right now.
Yeah, Red Deck Wins is like...
How many one-drops, how many one-drop creatures does that deck have? I think
they play at least 8 one-drops.
At least 8.
But I would say even more if you were to really... get to the basics
and
build one.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be bad. You want 8 to 12 one-drop creatures to be considered an aggro deck, or else you push yourself too much into a mid-range strategy.
Yeah, 8 minimum for one-drops for a red deck.
So, aggro deck, really. Because you want to be able to... You definitely need to cast a creature on turn 1, but even being able to cast 2 one-drop creatures on turn 2, that's also important. Yeah. So you're just spreading out your damage, so even if they do have a blocker, you're still going to be able to get around them.
Mm-hmm. You have 3 creatures, you know, you can get through with 4 power for 2 of them and they block 1. You know, you're still doing what you need to be doing, which is like, you don't really care if they block, you just want to get as most damage through... as efficiently as possible.
Yeah.
So you want to be tapping out every turn. You want to play as many creatures as you can.
You don't care about trading off with other creatures. It doesn't matter. You're just literally attacking almost blindly into them because, you know, for the most part, you don't care what they have.
You can't play around removal because if you play around removal, you're already lost. And you shouldn't be playing an aggro deck, pretty much.
It's okay, so aggro, you don't care what the other person's doing. You really have no interaction with them at all besides turning fucking tiny shit sideways.
Yeah.
Which is actually how I got arrested. Anyways.
But yeah, that's definitely the takeaway for aggro deck is you're definitely looking at the low-cost creatures, as many of them as possible, maybe a few combat tricks to push through damage, and that's pretty much it. You're just playing as you want to be as mana-efficient as possible and get as many guys swinging as
possible. So what's the highest converted mana cost in red deck? We're just using red deck wins as an example. What's the highest converted mana cost?
I believe it is 4 or 5.
Four of the red devotion guy.
The Mogus.
It's the 4/2. It does damage equal to the devotion to red when it enters the battlefield.
Yes,
that is the one.
And it's four of those, and they're four drops, and that's it. Everything else is three and below, right?
So yeah, pretty much you're looking for 8 to 12 one drops. You're looking to play, you know, 19, 20 lands, and you want to make sure you have some form of reach because you're not always
not like be reach able to, the mechanic, right?
No, not reach the mechanic. Reach meaning you can ignore kind of the creatures they have and go above them, maybe with like some evasion or maybe with some burn. Or, you know, with the new mono black aggro deck that's popping up, Mogus Marauder is really good. Give them intimidate and haste based on your devotion, which is really nice. So, you know, and then the red devotion guy, things like that. Things like you're not always going to reliably get a turn 4, turn 5 kill. A lot of times, post board games are going to bring in a ton of cheap removal, and they're going to one for one you all day long until they can land a big threat and just take over the board. So that's why it's nice to have these things. So if you get them down to like 3 points of life and it's like turn 4 or 5 and they're looking to slam like an Elspeth, you can just boom, lightning strike their face and end game before they even get to play it.
So also with red deck wins, they play a lot of burn spells just to get creatures out of the way, but also they can burn your face. So that's just part of the more aggressive strategy of, you know, like lightning fast, try and kill you. But if you just drop like a fucking, if your opponent drops a 1/3 and all you have is like 2/1s, you're like, motherfucker, how the fuck am I supposed to get through?
Even
you
can an
just,
0-3.
Or just a fucking 0-3. 0-4, that fucking stupid sheep.
Yeah.
Like, you can just, well, not 0-5. The sheep.
Sheep's 0-5.
The sheep's 0-5. Well,
0-4 is that.
Lug on a roll, Trailblazer.
Well, good thing they don't play it. But anyways, so you can lightning strike whatever their early drop is to get it out of the way, so you can just keep attacking in, and then if you draw a burn spell late game, it goes to the opponent's face.
Mm-hmm.
I want to give some examples of, like, some creatures of what we've seen right now. Like, the biggest one I'd say is, like, Rakdos Cackler. That's going to get played in every deck. Now, reading this card without... reading this card in general, like, it says it's a 1/1, and then you can make it a 2/2 by taking away the ability of blocking. So it's going to be a 2/2, but it cannot block. Now, most decks, you're going to see that as a huge downside to not be able to block, but in an aggro strategy, you don't care. Once again, you don't care about your life total. You're only trying to get in damage. Mm-hmm.
Gnarled Scarhide is another good one.
Gnarled Scarhide is a 2/1 for 1, and it can't block. These are all creatures that you want to just be doing damage. You don't care about their toughness. You're going to be playing 2/1s. You're going to be playing 3/1s. Hopefully those creatures have haste. Mm-hmm. You don't care about the downside of them hurting you, like the Fire Drinker Satyr.
Yeah.
Is that one? It's a 2/1 for 1, and you can pump it up by paying a red mana, but it gives the Fire Drinker +1/+0, but also does 1 damage to yourself. Well, yeah, you're doing 1 for 1, but you're only worried about their life total. That shit's supposed to go down faster than yours. Mm-hmm. You don't care what it does to you. You don't care how much it backfires. None of that crap matters. The late game doesn't matter. It just doesn't worry. You don't worry about that stuff. You only play, moving on to lands, you don't play Scrylands, and you don't play Guild Gates.
Well, I guess you can play Shocks, because once again, you don't care.
You want to play Shocks. You want to play lands that come in untapped.
And you want to play lands like the new one, Mana Confluence, where, once again, you don't care about the downside. Downsides don't matter in red, in the aggressive decks, red and black or whatever.
Because the game's over before they actually become downsides.
Game's over, exactly. So Mana Confluence, if you're playing a two-color deck or three-color deck, Mana Confluence takes care of that for you. Instead of drawing a bunch of black one-drops and having red mana in your hand, now you can just have Mana Confluence take care of that for you. You can drop that down and pay for whatever color one-drop you had in your hand. Yep. And it minus one life. When you tap it you lose one life, but you don't give a shit. So it's a perfect land for an aggressive strategy, but a shitty land for a mid-range deck in most cases. Unless you're playing three colors and maybe you can throw like one or two. But I would say like four mana Confluence, no problem for aggro. Once again, hit yourself all day long. You're going to hit yourself for one, you're going to hit them from two, and just go back and forth that way. You know, it doesn't matter.
What's that red one drop where you can pump him, but it does damage? Fire Drinker.
That's what you're talking about, yeah.
Oh, that's what you're talking about? Yeah, that's the perfect example.
Can you join us?
Yeah.
I was actually like daydreaming about something else. but yeah, that's the perfect example of what... like a red or just any aggressive deck wants to do. It doesn't care about the damage.
No high toughness.
Which you probably already said.
Who gives a shit? Attention. Don't play lands that come in tapped ever for any reason. It'll fucking bum you out if you have cards in your hand that can finish the game. You're like, I need one mana to win this game right now.
One turn untapped five. Land. That's all you need. One untapped land.
You better draw Scryland. If you draw a fucking land, that shit better be able to tap right then and there. That's what the whole deck's about. So there's just a lot of cards you cannot play in an aggro strategy, where the other strategy is you have a lot more flexibility. You can play like what you want, you know what I mean? But you better, it just might take you a while to get there. But aggro, it's just, there's a very fine number of like prerequisites for the card. You have to have certain things. Haste, what is that?
Which high Marauder? Power, low toughness.
High power, low toughness. You had Marauder, right?
Mogus Marauder.
Mogus Marauder is another perfect example.
Three drop, 2/2. When it comes to battlefield, it, equal to your devotion, you can give guys intimidate and haste.
So that you can give him
the that's a four of. If there's gonna be if you're gonna be playing black in an aggressive strategy, that's a four of. Black. There's another that's like one of the Rakdos Cackler type cards where or we went back to like Sylvan Caryatid or one of those kind of cards that whatever if it's for that strategy, you play four of these cards. It's
like a linchpin, you know. Linchpin. You have to have the card in the deck or else it just doesn't function properly.
So you have to have your one drops and two drops, but your three drop spot has to have four of these cards because when it comes in it at least by itself gives itself haste and what's intimidate?
Yeah.
So you can get in. Intimidate means that you know, same, different colors can't block. You know, if you're
if
playing
it's not black or an artifact, you can't block.
Exactly. So, anyways, I just wanted to get my two cents on it. That there's just some other prerequisite. These other conditions and characteristics of cards that you have to have for an aggro. Like they're just if the card says like gain life nonsense, like you don't fucking care.
Right.
If the card is a five or six drop with the ability is super powerful, you're never gonna get there. It doesn't matter. It's gonna sit in your hand, do nothing.
Yeah.
So
kind of like my humans deck. I'm not an aggro player. You know, I do like mid range and or like control mill type of decks.
Mm-hmm.
So I was building my humans deck, like I needed to ask you guys, like how the fuck do I, like what do I put in here? I know I put humans, but like what else? And a lot of the humans were like low drops. And so starting out with the deck, my highest drops were three drops. And then that was it. And then I eventually added a couple King Makars just to test them out. Like I don't know if they're going to stay or not, but I thought it would be interesting to try. And then I now have one Dictate of Helion.
Yeah.
And that's a five drop. And it's just a one of, just to try it out. And I feel like I'm starting to get too far into the deep end.
It
like
is. King Makar is too far into the deep end.
Yeah.
That's not going to win you the game when you bring it out. You're not going to be able to like get that last push damage in with it.
You're moving on to a late game strategy. It's pretty slow. Like, it doesn't do anything when it comes out. Next turn, I have to attack and it not die. And then the next turn after that, I untap and I see
better. By turn four, that card is not reliable in an aggro. I mean, in my opinion, it's just your deck is not a straight aggro strategy if you think that a card like that is okay for it. You know
what I mean? Painseer is questionably okay. It's better than King Makar just because it is a 2-drop, 2/2 for 2, which might have additional upside.
Right.
And it is a human. So, so last time we played, I started throwing all these cards in and kind of degraded the quality of the aggro strategy. And I saw that because I started adding you know, four drops and five drops. Not a whole bunch, but it was enough to slow it down.
Now, Painseer's in a weird spot, because it's not super aggressive in the fact that it can do lots of damage really quickly.
Right.
But it also has a downside that it is only for an aggro strategy. The downside is too great to play it in any other deck.
Right.
You can't play... the downside is you get to draw a card when it becomes untapped, but you lose that much life for its converted mana cost. If you play a deck that has, if you pull that Dictated Heliod, you could lose the game potentially.
Elspeth.
You could kill yourself.
Oh yeah, Elspeth.
You can't play these cards
with that.
So that card is in a funny spot where it's not super super aggressive. It is aggressive, but not super aggressive. But it also cannot be played at all in other formats. Archetypes.
So
weird card.
It comes down to like we're talking about. Like Painseer can work in a mid range kind of control-y strategy. But you need to add cards into your deck that aren't really that great and go along with that strategy just to make it work. So you want to try to avoid things where you take a couple of mediocre, okay stuff and make one good effect. Like we were talking about earlier, you want to have cards in your deck that are good on their own and that can synergize with other good cards to make a fantastic effect.
Right.
You know what I mean? You don't want to be playing like a lot of stuff. So like the Painseer in a mid-range, so like you have Elspeth and Painseer. Like you'd have to have scry. You have to be able to scry every turn, and then that.
Yeah, like, really. You know, like, I don't fucking want that thing.
Exactly.
Then you're playing like two strategies at once, almost.
Yeah. So you gotta really like understand the archetypes, and that will help you. You know, even when you're playing limited, it will really help you. You'll see a card, and you'll be like, "I know exactly what needs to go with this card to make it great," because I know it's an aggro card, and I put a bunch of aggro stuff around it, and we can go from there. It's really good that way. Just, you know, card evaluation. Knowing the archetype is really good because then you can evaluate the cards, you know, appropriately.
And also, Painseer is good for aggro because with aggro, you have a bunch of low drops. So each turn, you're playing more and more guys every turn. On turn one, you play one drop. On turn two, you play two one drops.
Yeah, two one drops.
Turn three, you play two drop and a one drop.
So your hand's already done.
Yeah.
Your hand's already done.
Your hand's getting depleted way faster than any other deck, because you want to kill. So with Painseer, if he can survive some miraculous way, then it pays off because you are refilling your hand.
Refill your hand and do damage, where if you were to play, like, Read the Bones, it can't work in aggro because it's not doing damage while drawing you the cards. Like, you can't...
Exactly.
You don't care about the minus two life.
You can't take that time off.
Yeah,
you can't have cards that don't do anything immediately.
Right.
You know,
you have to be adding...
Read the Bones is great because it sets you up, you know, for the next couple of turns, and you can just eventually overpower them. But it doesn't do anything in an aggro strategy because you gave the opponent one turn. So not only are you trying to make a turn four, turn five kill, now you have to make a turn three kill if you have Read the Bones in your deck.
So Painseer doesn't give him that one turn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's beneficial
either way.
Because
it's on a body.
True that.
And I do run Boon of Erebos and God's Willing in there. Boon of Erebos gives him +2/+0. I lose two life, I don't care. But that can win a game for me. When I can alpha strike, you know, swing in with everybody, and they're like, oh, I'll just block, and I'll have one turn to find an answer.
Go down to two life.
Yeah, go down to two life, whatever. He'll die on the swing back, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, Boon of Erebos, by the way, on the guy that's unblocked. And they're like, shit. Or it can just, you know, some of my guys are 2/2s or whatever. So on turn four, when you do play a fucking 4/4, I can, you know, play that card and then kill your defender. And then, you know, if it is Painseer, I can untap with him and be all right because I get that card.
How do we not mention Madcap skills?
It is.
That's like the ultimate.
I'm surprised they don't play
non-creature aggro card.
I'm surprised they don't play it in, like, Red Deck Wins.
I don't think they do, but they do play it in Red Black aggro.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a four of Madcap skills. I mean, if you haven't heard of it by now from other podcasts or whatever, just fucking kill yourself. No. It's +3/+0, and it's one colorless and one red. It's an enchantment aura. It gives the creature, target creature, +3/+0, and the ability that cannot be blocked unless two or more creatures are blocking it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm fucking up the words right now, but either way. So it makes if they only have one creature like Sylvan Caryatid, which will fuck your world up, you madcap skills it. Now you're doing a hell of a lot of damage, and it cannot be blocked by it.
Five damage, turn two, That's a quarter of your life. That's a lot. Like, you know, and you're expecting another 5 damage next turn. So it's one of those cards where it's like you have to answer it now.
Yeah.
Or else it's going to take over.
And they're not going to sacrifice their Caryatid, even if they did have 2 Caryatids, or they have to double block and
then
lose one.
Then it comes
one,
down to, like, do I lose my ramp up into, like, maybe stabilizing, or do I take
strategy
a big risk
time?
Yeah, it's
which is great for the aggro player, but
it's a really good card. I think it belongs more in a 2-color deck rather than just a straight mono-color deck.
Red, black, or red, white.
Yeah, pretty much. So.
So.
And that's wrapping it up for...
it's pretty much aggro.
I like how I think next time or one of the times we want to go over, like, mid-range strategies or control strategies or whatever. But that was nice. Aggro, kind of easy.
Yeah, aggro's always
really
fun.
Simple. It's
always fun, though.
One of those good archetypes.
For the new player.
Yeah.
Good archetype for a new player because it's very creature-based in combat. And that's what the game revolves around.
And it's not too complicated. You don't have to do these crazy tricks.
Yep. But it'll win you fucking games.
Yeah.
You can spend $30 and beat down some expensive decks.
Yeah, it's just fun to beat, like, a control deck in turn 4. And they have, like, a $200 deck. And they're like, God damn it!
All I have out on the field are, like, 5 scry lands. And I'm like, okay. It's like, all right. You know, that's the thing now.
So, wrapping up this episode, I want to bring in a new segment called How Not to Be a Dick. I'm going to say it like that every time, too.
Okay, good.
That's how I hear it in my head every time.
I expect you to go in your house, you know, get in the sound booth room, record the sound bit, and then put it on the podcast.
Yeah, we're going to have to come up with, like, a song or something, some funny intro for it, but...
Done. Easy.
So...
I expect, like, some 50s themed, like...
Yeah. Da, 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 da.
No, I'm not. Be a dick.
Yeah. Maybe some... Skip up, pop, beep, pop, pop. Some scatting. So anyways, how about to be a dick? I'm not talking about poop.
I got ideas in my head now. I'm like, I'm going to love doing this. Skeet it, beep, pop, no, not to be a dick. Okay.
So this is a segment that's going to revolve... I think it's going to revolve around gaming in general. Because if you're playing Magic, you probably play other games. Whether it's video games or board games or fucking
mind games,
whatever, you know.
Yeah, women.
You're probably a gamer. And so I've noticed this a lot. I've noticed this a lot on, like, digital games. So it's, like, not face-to-face. Face-to-face, people are generally, you know, respectable. They're not going to cuss you out or call you bad names. But, you know, when you're on the computer, if you're of any growing up age during technology, you found that there's a level of anonymity through the internet where you can just, you know, be the biggest fucking douchebag and you don't have to worry about it because you're never going to see that person and
no consequences.
You can just log off and then you forget about it. You know, I mean, sure, you're a bad person for doing it, and I am definitely not above doing that. I don't know if you guys remember Sub 7, but it was this program where you could fuck with people's computers. Oh my god, I was just such a little asshole using fucking, like, Yahoo Messenger or fucking ICQ for the fucking older crowd and just fuck with people. But uh oh, somebody's cracking a pack over here.
Uh oh, what pack is that?
Innistrad.
I'm gonna put it on hold. I just want to see what you fucking crack. Innistrad pack
being opened right now.
Instant counter target spell, return target permanent to its owner's hand.
Whoa, that's a
common. That sounds awesome.
Oh, into the lost in the mist. Yeah,
that
sounds
fucking awesome.
What do we got here?
Foil Liliana.
Oh, look at that, your typhoid you rats. Okay, we got for our uncommon, we have Midnight Haunting. Put 2 1-1 spirit tokens on the battlefield. Instant. Very nice. We have Demon Mail Hauberk. I don't know what that is. Equip creature gets +4/+2. Equip, sacrifice a creature. Sacrifice a creature to equip it. Oh my god.
Yeah, it works perfect with the card you just read off before that one.
Moan of the Unhallowed. Unhallowed. Put 2/2 black zombie tokens onto the battlefield. Flashback for 7.
Cost 4. Oh, that flashback.
Mm-hmm.
I have my rare is a land.
What land is it?
Moorland Haunt.
That's a good one.
Is it?
It's good, though.
Cool.
Still good, but it's not a...
Pay a white and blue.
Yeah, the Cavern of Souls.
Exile a creature card from your graveyard. Put a 1/1 white spirit with flying onto the battlefield. Hey! And we have a foil island!
Hooray!
Oh, that foil island.
Yeah. And that's it.
You gotta give that to fucking Peppermint Squirrel.
I'm not giving him dick for shit.
He stole one from him, like, when we first started playing Magic.
He pulled a foil island, and I'm like, I want that. And then
he went to the bathroom, and he just took it.
Yeah, so I'm a dick.
Just punked him for his foil.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyways, we were talking about anonymity online. So we've all kind of been on one end of it, whether we're being a dick or whether people are being a dick to us.
Oh, yeah.
And that just comes with gaming and just, you know, whatever.
I think it's that culture, that game culture.
Yeah, people rage hard with
and
games.
Plus, you gotta think, like, you're playing games. So, there's gonna be children playing these games as well.
Yeah.
And they're not gonna be the most mature, and they're gonna see some dick being a dick to other people, and then they're gonna catch on. So, you know, you can't, like, I don't know, be a dick back.
I'll definitely be a dick.
You know,
but let's try to figure out how not to be a dick.
Exactly. I think that's what we're going here.
Well, this is more for you guys not to be a dick. I'm going to be a dick all day.
Oh, okay. Applies less. Okay.
Well, not you guys. The general you. So anyways, I notice on 3 games I play at the moment, and this probably can be applied to a lot of other games, but you know, once we start talking about it, you'll understand. I've seen it a lot on the Duels of the Planeswalker, you know, a lot of newer players on there, or people who aren't, like, super invested in Magic. I've seen it on Hearthstone. It is an epidemic on Hearthstone.
It's a Blizzard game.
Yeah, it is Blizzard. I expect nothing less. Baron's chat all day. Thank God they don't have a chat on there. It's just like you can do kind of like a certain amount.
Chat or they annoy the shit out of you on there?
Well, with the chat, they don't annoy because there's no chat, but there's like emotes they can do.
Right.
And then I've noticed it on Magic Online, but not so much.
I notice it a lot.
I do notice it, especially when they do it in drafts. Pisses me off.
I always get it when I play in the practice rooms.
Oh yeah.
Because I'll play my mono black because I was like, yeah, I want to get better. I want to learn how to play the deck. And then I play somebody and they're playing like Clarion Spotlight and like Master Biomancer, and there's like I win and they're like, oh, lucky top deck, you net deck, why don't you try to play a real deck? I'm like, I just won. Like, what are you talking about? Like, obviously, you know, it's cool to try to brew these decks and like see if it works and stuff like that, but don't like, if you lost, don't like try to bash on their deck. Like, yeah. You lost. Like, obviously you did something wrong, so you need to fix it.
Yeah.
But that's the one thing I get the most. It's like, oh, nice net deck, bro. It's like, whatever, man. Like, who cares? Like, if you want to play a brew, go ahead and play a brew. I don't care. I'm not going to bash you for it. But yeah. I just want to play this deck because I like it, and it wins. So.
Indeed.
You're going to win and you're going to lose, dude. There's no fucking person that just goes 15-0, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just doesn't, it's a game of, there's a little element of luck here. You don't have that. You're not going to get that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the main issue I run into, I'm gonna try and give you an over-exaggerated situation. So don't, like, try and argue, like, oh, well, blah, 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 blah. This is over-exaggerated.
I'm going to argue.
Yeah, I'm going to argue, too, actually.
Oh, my God.
Whenever you say something like that now, I'm really amped
to
tell you off.
Bro. Okay, whatever. So
wrong.
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 Okay, so I think this, I'm going to try and use a real-life example from a draft I did on Magic Online. So this person had Jace Memory Adept on the board. You know, I go...
Oh. Sorry, it's kind of dry.
Okay, I have Jace Memory Adept on the board. I have, let's say, 11 cards in my library left. And it's their turn, they untap. And so basically, I'm going to have one more turn because Jace Memory Adept will mill you 10. And so I have one turn to, like, you know, do something, win the game. But unbeknownst to me, they pull a millstone. But they want, let's say they have 20 mana, and they have 5 cards in their hand, including the millstone. They will play out like four of their creatures, and then they'll play the millstone, and then they'll minus zero Jace, and then they'll use the millstone. But it's like they needed to play. They don't need to play out those four extra creatures. It's kind of like saying like.
They want to
show
off.
Yeah, they want to show off. It's like, yeah, I could mill you, but check out all these four creatures I had. I could have killed you through damage anyways. So it's like, why waste that extra, like, 15, 20, 30 seconds of both of our lives just to, like, show off and be a dick that you could extra win? Like, you already won, you know? There was a chance I could have won, but you pulled the card and now you need to show how you extra won. And that is so rampant on fucking Hearthstone, where, you know, it's a stalemate or whatever, and they fucking, you know, they do something that can do 10, like the mage has a 10 damage spell. And so, you know, they fucking make this guy bigger, they fucking do this with this guy, blah, 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 and then they're like, oh yeah, by the way, you know, 10 damage to your fucking face. And it's like, well, you didn't need to do all the other stuff. Basically, you're fucking showing off, and it's kind of like rubbing it in the other person's face.
It is.
You know, it's being a dick. And it's not even rubbing in my face. Like, yeah. It's just the wasting my fucking time. You know, I don't expect high caliber people to be playing games. That's what I get for being almost 30 years old and playing games still. You know, I should expect that. Oh my God, I just said I'm almost 30. It kind of freaked me out. So, that's basically what I'm saying. Don't be a dick. You don't have to show off how much more you could beat me. You know, like, if you're in person playing Magic, like, at a FNM or something, like, the person's not going to, like, go like, well, most of the time, if I know I'm going to lose, I'm just going to concede, you know? But if there's a chance I can win, you know, and then you pull, if you top deck fucking something, and then that gives you the ability to win, you're not going to play out your first fucking five cards and then play the card that's going to win you the game. Like, you might get smacked in the face for doing something like that.
It's just a bad strategy and attitude to take, because, like, especially in, like, Magic, where you're never working off perfect information, you could be like, okay, well, I have this one card that wins, and if I cast it, I win. But they'd be like, well, I'm going to cast these two other cards in front of it. And then they cast the one card that makes them win. And then, like, just for an example, there's a card called Memory Leap, where it's a counter spell unless they pay three. So you could have just played your win card and won, and they couldn't have countered it. But you chose to, like, show off and, you know, kind of be rude about it, I guess, and you just blew yourself out of the water. It's one of those things where it's like you just want to win. You don't want to give your opponent any chance to blow you out and to come back.
So when I think of all this stuff, I think of how would you act if you were person to person.
Exactly.
That's the whole thing. Is that I would be pretty upset if that someone did that across the table from me and played all this fun stuff and like, oh, and I could have just killed you. And then he had his little stupid smile. I'd be like, what the fuck? When did this turn into a game like this? Why weren't we just trying to play out our decks best we could and just be fair and like have a good time about it? You were obviously not trying to have a good time with me. You were trying to have a good time for yourself and just be, just be a smug little asshole. You know what I mean? Nobody likes to show off. That's showing off as we grow older is like the last thing you want to do. Like if you had this fucking car that you bought or whatever like that, when you're 17 and you're 20 or whatever, you want to have all your friends come take a look at it. When you're
30, 40, you want to spend the donuts.
You don't even want to talk about what money you spent on that car. Like, you'd rather just leave it like a, just like.
Because when you think about it, all you think of is a bill. You're like, oh, yeah. I got to pay for this shit.
Yeah. You don't, showing off, it just goes away. With the older you get, let's just be mature about it in the same way. When you play a game, be mature about it.
And most of the situations are situations, because in Magic, there's, like, it's so much more complicated than Hearthstone. So in Magic, like, there's a lot of different shit that can swing the game, so you do want to play it out, or you do want to play certain cards out to maybe draw out the counterspell. But the situations I'm talking about is, like, when I'm all tapped out. Yeah. When I'm all tapped out and my creatures are tapped, and it's like, if you draw a burn spell, then that extra damage is going to kill me along with your creatures. So it's just something to where, like, you know, if this happens to you or maybe you do it yourself, like, try and think about, like, don't be a dick about it. Like,
I would love for people to give examples in, like, the comments
section. Yeah, if you could fucking give examples on how people are dicks, like,
this is how I feel, and we should change this.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
One person at a time.
So, I mean, that's... That has been bothering me since I've been playing Hearthstone a lot, and I just see it all the time on there. And not that that's, like, a more immature crowd, because there are, like, corner cases on Hearthstone where you have to complete a quest by killing so many dudes.
Yeah.
And it's like, you just want to kill that dude and then do the damage spell to your face. Like, sure, that completes the quest, but it's like, you know, don't be a dick. So hopefully next week we can give you some more knowledge about how not to be a phallic object. And, yeah, I think that completes it for this episode. We've been up since fucking 8 o'clock this morning. It is now 3 o'clock. I think it's time to fucking wrap things up in Magic World.
Badass day, though.
Oh, yeah, yes. It was a lot of fun.
I don't wake up at 8 o'clock for much, you know, if it's not work or school or something. But
I
Magic.
Wake up at 8 o'clock, period, unless it's Magic.
I actually woke up at 4 o'clock this morning, so don't even ask me why.
Mm-hmm.
But, so anyways, this has been episode 9 of If Lands Could Kill. I am Knife City.
I'm Hot Sauce.
This is right.
I don't know what to say now. I messed up the mojo.
You're Hot Sauce.
I'm Hot Sauce?
Yes.
I am Hot Sauce. All right. No, I'm a quickness.
My name's Gabe.
Gabe? Nice to meet you, Gabe. When is Half-Life 3 coming out?
Oh!
Catch you guys on the flip side. Later.
So XCOM, right? Not a game about rape. It's about alien invasion.
Oh, same
thing. Which is kind of like rape.
Which is kind of like rape. Yeah, the planet's getting raped. But no penis. It's just alien. It's just like Ronald. He's just smooth. He's just smooth.
And the podcast.
Can't talk.
So
I haven't played it yet.
You downloaded the expansion for XCOM?
Yeah, I got the XCOM. And, I know, right?
I heard it was about rape.
Oh, no. That's what you thought it was saying.
Yeah.
This is when you thought you were out of the woods, man. Rape.
Yeah, so let's just get right no rape planet. Crap, all right? Let's get right onto Diablo 3 expansion. There's no raping there. None at all. None to be found. So I haven't played either. I heard they fixed Diablo a lot. Yeah, the Raper of Souls. It was so easy, we didn't find it. Yeah. So.
We do highbrow rape jokes on this show.
Not the puns. Not the easy puns. God, it's all the work's done for us. We want to do the raping. We want to work for it. It's not raping if you don't work for it. Dude. Like the definition.
My neighbors are like.
So, are we a magic podcast? What do we do here?
I don't know how we're gonna do it.